Everyone, just got a quick read before we get the show started today. For all of you who listen to Rumor Flies and own an Android device, do me a quick favor. Go to the Google Play Store and download Podcast Republic. It's a fantastic app that allows you to get all of your favorite podcasts directly on your Android devices. I know Josh tried it out the other day when we were talking to Podcast Republic, and he's actually a big fan of it. I think he's become a convert out of it. I'll let him speak for himself. Anyway, go ahead and download the app. Make sure to set Rumor Flies as a favorite so you don't miss any of our new episodes. Again, the app is Podcast Republic, available on your Android device.
Welcome to Rumor Flies, everybody. I am Ryan.
I am Joshua.
And I am Gregory with Endeath Media.
And he is back.
That might be the first time this whole season you plugged your company.
I find that highly unlikely.
Mostly because you weren't here for most of the season.
Sick of burn. I deserve it. Anyway, so this is a very special episode for us because, number one, it is the season finale.
Woo!
Yay. B.
Thank God.
It is the 50th episode officially. Greg actually does not have a count inclusively. No. So
shut up.
We did the 50 for 50 already. Go listen to it and act like it's new. And then also.
No, but seriously, it's our 50th episode, which means we've covered at minimum. We average 4 to 5 myths an episode.
Let's say 5 for round numbers.
That's, so we have between 200 and 250 myths that we've covered.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about that in numbers.
Yeah, man. And that's not including our bonus episodes and stuff like that. But this has been awesome.
Yeah.
We are a quarter of the way to 1,000 myths covered.
The devil's dildo.
That is fucking hilarious.
I'm sorry, I had to steal it.
Oh my God.
I had to steal it.
And at a last note, if it sounds like we're a little bit loosey-goosey, it's because a little bit of inside baseball right here.
Love the reference.
It took you 2 weeks to hear the episode that we recorded right after the last episode that we did because we have to do a twofer because I'm going to be out of town by the time this episode comes out.
We are on hour 4 of proximity to each other. And as much as we love each other this episode, we all get a little punch drunk real quick and probably real drunk.
And this is not a drinking episode tonight. It is a remedies episode, but we are still holding the standards of a drinking episode. So if we sound a little bit more fun, that's why. And also, we're...
Please drink responsibly.
Yeah, please drink responsibly.
Do as we say, not as we do.
We are not lawyers. We are not doctors. We are not teachers.
Yeah, all the what's the word I'm looking for? All the,
Oh, shit.
What's the word?
Disclaimer.
Disclaimers. Yes. Thank you. Every possible disclaimer is now disclaimer. Thrown out there. Do as we say, not as we do. Actually, don't follow what we do if it's terrible information. I am still disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. Let's get into the episode.
Caveat emptor. So, Josh, you got anything to open this up with before we jump right into the topics?
Yes. We are once again going to hammer it into your pretty little minds that we are going to be a part of the Pottern Love Convention. You can go to pottern.love and enter in the code RUMOR, R-U-M-O-R, not the British or Canadian version, and you can get discounted hotels, tickets, and things of that nature.
And just holler at us if you're coming down to New Orleans.
Yeah, and there is probably going to be something special for those of you who make it down here and are fans of us. We will have something for you guys. Nothing set in stone yet. Or is it? JK, LOL, I don't know, question mark. You'll find out.
I will go behind the levee and carve it into a rock to make sure it is set in stone. And then it has to happen by contract.
We are legally obligated.
That's actually Napoleonic code.
All right. So as we said, we like to
wait,
do.
I always thought Napoleonic code was 3 different things because it's chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry.
I thought it was Stella.
That's a Neapolitan cold. Damn it.
Oh, shit. I wasn't right on that one.
Listen, Blanche. First topic. We got Napoleonic code here, okay?
First topic this evening. I really thought it was Napoleon.
Did you fucking confuse Neapolitan with Napoleon?
Yes, the Neapolitan Bonaparte invaded Russia.
Did you think Napoleon was triracial?
I don't know what I thought. It's too late.
Emperor Neapolitan Bonaparte.
Oh, Christ on a Christmas tree. At least I admit it, man. Like, full behind the curtains here.
All right, the goose is way too loose right now. I'm going to go ahead and introduce my own first topic. We're going to be talking about hiccup remedies. And God damn it, we could have done two episodes alone on this. And this is probably going to come back in the next Remedies episode, because with the time I had in order to parse out all the different Remedies to cover, we're only going to be able to cover a few, because I know for a fact I'm going to get some responses that say, well, you didn't cover this. We're going to, okay? We're going to. But here is the heavy part of hiccups, and then afterwards we're going to just get straight into the Remedies in the next episode, next time we do Remedies. So, starting with it, we are going to be talking about the scientific term for hiccups called singultus. I think that's what it's called.
That sounds good.
Yeah, sure. And essentially what a hiccup is, it is a rapid contraction of the diaphragm. And if you're not aware of what the diaphragm is, it is this muscle that sits right below your lungs that helps you to breathe.
Straw poll all of a sudden for you two. How do you feel about hiccups? I personally hate them.
I'm ambivalent.
Okay, I want to know who enjoys them, because absolutely not.
Not enjoy, but just kind of like, oh man, I have the hiccups.
No, dude. It makes me, if it goes on for more than 5 minutes or so, I start getting nauseous and start having problems. Like it's I can't stand
hiccups. I would rather hiccup than sneeze.
So I've been.
Oh no, really? No. I'll take a sneeze over a hiccup.
I love sneezing.
Any day.
I hate sneezing.
Really?
So, wait, Josh, do you have the Achoo gene?
No, I don't think I do.
So I have the Achoo gene, which I love. It's fun.
What?
Yeah, this is a thing.
Yeah.
In mostly blue-eyed people, which I'm mostly blue-eyed, apparently you're more likely to walk outside, and if you're exposed to too much sunlight.
Oh, the sun?
Yeah.
I can sneeze occasionally I've definitely noticed when I'll squint down and then I'll have a sneeze.
It's a guaranteed I sneeze twice when I walk outside most of the time.
Oh, it's not that consistent.
Yeah, it is. It is a very frequent thing. But anyway, hiccups. So I have a positive association with them, because the only times that I really hiccup is either when I'm laughing.
It's called the photo sneeze reflex.
Mm-hmm.
Or that makes sense.
Or the Achoo gene. That's more fun. I either hiccup when I am laughing too hard or I am drunk. And both of those usually end up being a fun time. I'm not an angry drunk.
No.
I might start hiccuping during this segment, and that'd be great.
You know when I hiccup? It's when I eat too much too quickly. And I can't breathe, so I start to hiccup, and I hate it.
And we have a rare occasion of when Josh is poo-pooing on my subject. So.
Ooh. Man, that feels good. I don't want to wipe.
Well, it was just a small tangential thing.
Is this what a bidet feels like?
It was a no wipe drop. We got it. Okay. All right. So moving on to the causes of hiccups. Nobody knows for sure.
Really?
It's a very strange phenomenon, because there have been tons of studies on hiccups, which I'm going to cover, that have looked for cures for hiccups, but nobody still knows exactly what is the root cause of them.
That's fascinating.
What we do know is that hiccups are connected to something called the vagus and the phrenic nerves. And these both are nerves that run either along the back or down the neck and between the lungs to the diaphragm.
I'm looking at this word. Is it vagus or vagus?
I say vagus.
The only reason I ask is because it's not spelled like Vegas, Las Vegas.
I was just trying to avoid vagina jokes, okay?
Okay.
So I want to see the vagus nerve. Oh, yeah, okay. So it's V-A-G-U-S. So vagus, I guess.
Yeah, that's the only reason I ask. Coming from somebody who doesn't know how to pronounce anything.
Sorry.
The guy who confused Neapolitan with Napoleon.
No, it's not your gambling nerve. But and there's also the phrenic nerve. So, and that is loosely connected to the term for phrenology, which I think we will talk about on this show at some point. I would very much love to do that. So I'm going to go with the three... the two most common ideas of
the root cause of hiccups.
It kind of ties into three.
Okay.
Of what people think that hiccups may be the cause from.
Okay.
That was a bad way to put it. Anyway, so the first one we're going to talk about is the evolutionary theory, where it is imprint or a residue of our evolutionary process.
That's interesting.
Just in the same way that nobody can figure out exactly what the appendix is for, they think it might be something to do with white cell production.
I thought it had to do with white blood cell production. Like when you want to look up something in a book and it tells you the page number.
Funny. Anyway, so we're going to talk about what it actually is. They think that there's this way that amphibians they would have, so amphibians, if anybody doesn't know, they can either survive on land or in water, some more than others on each side. And they have this way of switching between like being able to breathe from their gills to using oxygen by clearing out like the CO2 in their system.
Breathing on land or in water.
Yes. And it kind of like it causes a diaphragmic thing. And the idea of the, that some scientists think is that we actually have this residue from our evolutionary traits that causes us to have these hiccups from like our reptilian or our amphibian brain right when we were moving from the water to the land.
No, Ryan, it's from our reptilian overlords, okay?
No, we are not going into that. We don't do that here. So that's the first idea, and it kind of has some merit to it because when they talk about frogs, it's like when they're exposed to more CO2, they are less likely to be breathing through their gills. No, sorry, reverse. They are actually more likely to be breathing through their gills than their actual, like, whatever the analog of their lungs is. I'm not sure of amphibian respiratory systems because it's a bit confusing because they can do both.
I'll allow it.
Get you one that can do both. But essentially,
my man,
it's just kind of like trace elements of us trying to get over our evolutionary traits. It's just kind of like how a lot of people are not born with wisdom teeth.
Oh, those barbarians.
Yeah, yeah, we're still getting over. No, they're the evolution.
I know.
They're the new ones. I'm the barbarian. I still have my wisdom teeth. I don't want to let them go. The dentist tried to take them, and I was like, no, I'm keeping them. I know you
know how much money you get for that, though?
No, they grind them up and make them into chalk.
No, the tooth fairy.
The chalk industry uses wisdom teeth. I know it.
Is that how they paint football fields?
Yes, with little children's wisdom teeth. That's how they paint football fields, baseball fields, soccer pitches. Yes, I know how to use your terminology.
I was going
to
say, I'm impressed.
Second theory, the suckling theory, which makes a little bit more sense to me.
Get you one that can do both.
Exactly. So the idea behind the suckling theory is that...
Let him have it.
Let him have it.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No. I'm glad. I'm glad I'm actually able to entertain somebody.
Yeah.
So the suckling theory is that generally there has been a pattern where, wait, Josh, is it okay if I talk about the baby on here?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Josh, you're about to have a baby, right?
As far as I know.
Not you, your wife. But anyway, apparently babies can have hiccups in the womb.
Really?
Yes.
Ha! Huh.
Ask her about it. See if she had it. The kicks may have been hiccups.
But no kicks yet.
No kicks yet?
No kicks yet.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rick. It turns out that babies can have hiccups very prevalently while in the womb. Not only that, after they're born, babies have a lot of hiccups. That's like a common trope in like cartoons, movies, and everything. Babies have hiccups, and you see like, you know, the mother patting the back of the baby.
Yeah, now that I think about it,
I thought that was to birth them after eating.
I'm going to get into that.
Is this my first time shitting on y'all's topic?
Yeah. No. That was actually a very...
astute observation.
I will call it an organic flow to the actual conversation.
See, yes. We got a Greg. We got one that can do both.
Yes.
Hannah.
So the idea is that hiccups are meant to clear out air bubbles in the stomach so that the actual infant can take in more milk during the suckling stage.
Well, when you said when you said the suckling theory, my mind went to that, but I wasn't trying to be too sophomoric. But I was that's where my mind went.
Turns out mammals are the only ones that hiccup.
Huh.
So once again, mammals are the only ones that have fingerprints, apparently, and also mammals are the only ones that that suckle. Well, obviously suckle because mammary glands.
Don't cats have thumbprints?
I don't know. I didn't ask one. But it turns out that mammals can hiccup, like, almost across the board.
Greg, do cats have thumbprints? Look that up for me.
I mean, they don't have thumbs.
But, well, paw print. Well,
shot that one down.
Never mind. I thought I read something the other day about some animal having thumbprints.
Anyway, fingerprints on cats. Just search that.
Or animals. Just there's a particular animal.
It's koalas and primates. I'll tell you that right now.
Maybe it is koalas I was thinking of.
We talked about this last episode.
I don't remember anything we talked
cats
about.
Cats have distinct nose prints.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. So you can...
According to thenest.com, which I do not have time to vet yet.
That's why cat burglars get caught so much.
Oh,
they can get printed.
God.
So anyway, we're going to go ahead and move on to... What's it called? That's right. Hiccups. God damn it. I'm so sorry, listeners. We are going to get back on track. Hiccups. The suckling theory. So it a little evolutionary theory is that babies actually hiccup a lot more than adults. Like, babies are known to hiccup a whole lot.
Now, are you specifically talking about in the womb or when they're born?
Both in the womb and post-birth.
Okay.
It decreases after birth, you know, incrementally.
Kind of like your lifespan.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very morbid, but
how astute. So the less hiccups you have per year, the more likely you are going to die. But essentially what they think is that it's a way to kind of just clear out extra air bubbles in your stomach, and that kind of carries over into adulthood. That's why it's less prevalent than in infants, but at the same rate, it still happens.
Gotcha.
So that's the second theory. The third one is straight up lung training, which is also involved with infants and carries over to adults.
I can see it. Yeah. Okay.
Because when you have, I didn't go too deep into this, but when you have, like, you know, babies, when they're in the amniotic sac, they're not using their lungs till a certain point in their development.
Mm-hmm.
And the hiccups is kind of a way to jumpstart the lungs to kind of just, like,
yeah,
give them that little bit of, like, getting used to actually being into the usual rhythm of breathing.
Well, that's also another reason why when babies stop breathing, they tickle their feet.
So they can hiccup?
So it jumpstarts their system.
Ah, laughter.
Yeah, it's the best medicine.
Moving on, the besides common occurrences medicine that cause hiccups is laughter, like I said before. Alex from Instant 3 Play is a very common laugh hiccuper. Excitement, if somebody is in an elated state of mind, either, you know, just excitement or extreme stress or anything like that, they can have the potential of hiccuping. Third one, fizzy drinks.
Oh, that's happened to me.
That's happened to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Usually it's burps, but hiccups is too. Alcohol happens to me.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, it hasn't happened yet. And then finally, eating too quickly, just as
guilty
Josh has said.
Guilty as charged.
And there are a plethora of other supposed reasons for hiccuping or causes.
But it's, again, because we don't really know why.
You know what? Bitch at us on Twitter as to what your reason is, and we did not cover. We like it. We like the interaction.
Yeah. @RumorFlies on Twitter.
Yes. And continuing, the longest bout of hiccups as a little extra fact.
Oh, I have heard about this.
I'm going to give over under. I know you're looking at the notes, Josh, but just.
I didn't look that far.
Okay. Greg, let's start with you. What do you think it is?
If I'm. I know it's decades.
For the record, hiccups can last from anywhere from like less than a minute to about how long I'm about to mention.
I the number 8's in my head, but I feel like it was closer to like 20.
So I remember there was
I remember when it ended, it was a big deal because he finally stopped, right?
There was a segment on Ripley's Believe It or Not, the television show from back in yesteryear.
I wish the Ripley's Museum was still here.
There was a guy, I remember, who hiccuped for like 20 plus years. So I'm going to take a shot in the dark here and I'm going to say 47.
47, Josh?
I'm going to just go with 20, but for some reason, the number 8's in my head for some reason.
Well, both of you would have lost in Price is Right because it was 68 years.
Well, I mean, we were under, so we would have still been fine.
Just shut the fuck up. All okay. Right. So we're going to move on to, according to Guinness Book of World Records, not Ripley's Believe It or Not, Charles Osborne hiccuped from 1922 to 1990, totaling 68 years. And it started while he was weighing a dead hog for slaughter. Well, it was already slaughtered, I guess. And then it turns out that for about the first...
It haunted him.
Yes. Oh, my God. Hog haunting. Hogting. For the first couple of decades, I'm just going to say decades right there, right? That's a long time. He hiccuped 40 times a minute. It eventually tapered down to 20 times a minute in his later years. Until suddenly in 1990, I couldn't find the reason why, but the hiccuping just stopped. And then he died in 1991, so he didn't get to enjoy that for too long.
Oh, poor guy.
Maybe that was a secret to surviving.
So.
That's fair.
Now that we have talked about hiccups for a little...
On Rumor Flies, correlation is causation.
I mean, I guess he lost his purpose in life. He just had to hiccup for as long as possible. So now that we've covered all that backstory, which we're not going to do the next time we talk about hiccups, we're going to talk about a little survey of remedies. And just Josh and Greg, give me your top twos. Josh, Greg.
Holding your breath.
Drinking water.
Standing on your head.
I was going to do the upside down one. Those are the big three I heard. Holding your breath, upside down, drinking water.
I've heard one more.
Oh, go ahead.
Breathing into a bag.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Like
sounds vaguely familiar, but I'm not.
Not like panic attack style, like breathing into a bag.
Right.
I'm going to cover all of them.
Nice. All right, cool.
All right. So we're going to start with the most famous one, which is holding your breath, which I admittedly have done.
And I've done that many times, yeah.
And
if it's really bad, I just start trying anything I've heard of.
It works every time for me. Every single time I hold my breath and it goes away.
Well, you are an idiot, Josh and Greg and me.
I mean,
we're all idiots.
That's fine.
According to studies. So,
I don't need a study to tell me that. You listen to 10 minutes on the show. There's no study needed.
He's laughing about it.
I mean,
so we're going to start with holding your breath.
Well, you know what, Ryan? I talked to Tim Allen and he thinks you're an idiot.
All right, so starting from holding your breath, this connects to the amphibian brain theory, like the evolutionary theory, because it turns out that amphibians are more likely to switch between lung to gill.
Okay.
Or whatever the function
is. It doesn't
is.
Matter.
No, it does. But I, this is my fault for due diligence. Somebody just at me and say penalty shot, and I'll put it in there. Whatever. Anyway, it involves when exposed to CO2, it turns out that amphibians switch from breathing in water to breathing in air.
Yeah.
And this is where it comes from. When you hold your breath, the CO2 levels in your lungs they skyrocket because you're not taking any more oxygen and your lungs are, you know, converting this oxygen to CO2.
I gotcha.
Now, it totally doesn't work. There was a case study done on this several times. And it seems that by placebo study, there wasn't really much of an improvement for the whole, just holding your breath situation.
Did they take...
Number one, think about how long the study took to get somebody induced for hiccups.
Did they take into account the placebo effect with by placebo? Is that what that means? I'm genuinely asking.
Well, the deal is that the placebo effect doesn't really work for this study.
Okay.
Because if you're holding your breath, you know you're holding your breath.
Yeah, that's fair. You know when you're breathing or not. Yeah.
Unless they waterboard somebody with hiccups, they don't know whether they're actually holding their breath or not.
That's a very,
they do know,
very interesting image in my head.
Sean Hannity, it's been a while. So,
nice.
Topical.
So anyway, moving on to the next one.
I'm going to call my lawyer.
That you guys have not mentioned, getting scared.
Oh, I have heard that.
Good.
Because it that one, yeah.
Also doesn't work. Same case study did the same thing. There's three case studies that I'm citing from. I'm not going into detail because it's a long enough topic as it was just getting into the beginning of it. There were three case studies, one that was doing the medical, one that was doing the old wives' tales, and one that was doing just some of the more reputable ideas.
So let me ask you this. How do they, when they're doing these studies, how do they get someone to hiccup?
That's the thing. I really can't tell that. I couldn't find in the literature about how they got them to hiccups. I think they either had people that had chronic hiccup problems or they just tried to stimulate hiccups.
Okay.
By any of the means that I listed earlier, whether that be drinking, fizzy drinks.
Eating too fast, things of that nature, yeah.
Something that, like, I guess they did an interview before actually using those people as a case study and said, what gives you hiccups? And then they induced that. Now, that could also add some error to the study because some ways of inducing hiccups could actually be different
it's
in terms
the
of their endurance.
Yeah.
Because we also, like I said, don't know how it works.
Yeah.
Scaring people, same study, didn't work that well. No difference between people that just kind of waited it out. Now, paper bag. You guys mentioned this, right?
Yeah, I've never done this.
Plays into the same thing as holding your breath.
I was going to say.
Twofer. If you're breathing into a bag, you're breathing out CO2 and you're breathing it back in. So it's just the same thing as holding your breath. It doesn't hurt you, but at the same rate, by studies, it's not going to help you.
Okay.
And one that I'm surprised you guys weren't going to talk about because this is the most reputable old wives' tale where I haven't found much of a pushback to it.
Huh.
Spoonful of sugar.
It makes the medicine go down.
And it also just makes the hiccups go away.
They
still can't explain it.
Spoonful Apparently, of sugar makes the hiccups go away.
In case studies, this one had the marginally best result in making hiccups disappear.
Okay.
Aside from a few extreme solutions, which I have not mentioned yet. And then there's drinking water.
Done that as well.
drinking lots of water. Doesn't work.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Work. The only reason it might work is because when you drink water, sometimes you stop breathing.
Well, I tend, when I do drink water to get rid of hiccups, I hold my breath at the same time.
When I shotgun a beer, I don't breathe while doing it. So, I mean, wow, that really said a lot about me.
Okay.
So moving on. And the last one that I'm going to include in here, lemon and bitters. There was a significant effect on people that had hiccups. Where they took bitters, and by that I mean Angostura's, any sort of tincture that's usually mixed with alcohol, that's put in alcohol, mixed with lemon, which is very sour. And it's supposed to like jolt you out of it and then also add like a bitter aspect. I think it's just kind of like an assault on the senses.
I'm sorry. Dad's getting drunk again. I'm getting rid of these hiccups. I want an old fashioned.
Well, funny you say that because it did work, but the study was done specifically on intoxicated people. It worked on drunks. They don't have really much information on sober people.
That's a common trope now that I think about it, that I've seen in different forms of media portrayed. The drunk who has the hiccups.
Yeah.
I didn't make that connection until now.
Yeah. But lemon and bitters. I wish I had hiccups right now because I would go get some Peychauds and then a lemon and then just like squeeze it in and just eat it straight up. To see if it worked. But I'm going to go with two definite kind of remedies.
Okay.
And by definite kind of, I mean like there literally is no agreed upon cure to hiccups. I'm going to say that right now. So even in the next episode, unless there is some groundbreaking work on hiccup research, we don't have a definite remedy.
Oh, I can't wait for you to get a penalty shot on this.
Not going to get one. I will fight somebody over this.
Yeah.
There is no definite remedy. And I will jump into the first thing that somebody will fight me on. We're going to talk about medical remedies.
Okay.
There are people that have something like chronic hiccups that can actually be painful and be actually impeding somebody's life.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine.
And there are a few different medications for it.
What if they're a surgeon?
Promethazine is one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Lean?
Yeah, lean. Well, you got to mix promethazine with codeine and then Sprite. Oh my God, I just gave somebody a drug recipe on.
No, you didn't add the Jolly Rancher.
You're right. I didn't add the Jolly Rancher, so I am cleared of all that right there.
Oh, we're not doctors.
Lil Wayne, if you listen to this podcast, hit us up.
Shout out Wheezy F, baby.
There is only one. There are a few different prescribed remedies to hiccups that I did not write down because there's only one that's actually approved by the FDA, and that one is called chlorpromazine. And like I said, it's the only official drug approved by the FDA for treating hiccups. And though there are others, it only has mixed results, and it also has a lot of side effects. Like, for instance, hypotension, which means instead of hypertension, which people with like, you know, high blood pressure, this can send you into like depression almost because like people with hypotension have that type of issue.
Well,
it's low blood flow and then urinary retention, which is the worst thing ever. I have the bladder of a 3-year-old.
Can confirm.
My fiance and Alex say that I have something called riabetes because I pee so much.
I love it. I was going to say, if with hypotension, if you have the hiccups, you're probably pretty depressed anyway.
But it's only a... maybe. It's only a marginal fix.
Oh, so it's not a permanent thing.
Yeah, it's shown to work for some patients, but not all.
Yeah.
It's not like this is what cures it. So that's the crazy part about this.
Okay.
And I'm going to go by the last solution to it, which has worked and has been... I'm going to go to the last solution, which has worked so much so that there have been 2 Ig Nobel Prizes actually ascribed to the people that discovered it,
or really?
At least revived it. And if anybody's know what the Ig Nobel Prize is, if anybody has tickets to it, you should probably send us some because we'll gladly
go.
To it. That's right up our alley.
We'd go in a heartbeat.
Yeah. The Ig Nobel Prizes is kind of like the Nobel Prizes, but it's for kind of like the wacky and weird discoveries in science that still advance the field. And this one happens to be a cure for hiccups being digital rectal massage.
Wait. What?
Fingering the butt.
Yeah, no, I like prostate?
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Josh volunteers his tribute.
Actually, I don't know if it's just
hell
prostate.
Hell yeah, I do.
I don't know if it's just prostate. There isn't enough research on it. But what has happened is apparently in 1990, there was the first situation where They didn't explain what led them to get to that situation.
Okay, that was my next question.
But I have the second situation.
It's kind of like how we discovered milk in cows. You always kind of wonder, you're like, who just went?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's try that. Yeah.
So there are three stuff. There are three different people that went on the record for this. One of them was, I believe, just a farmer that had a long bout of hiccups, and his explanation was, yeah, nothing worked. I tried all the remedies, and all of a sudden I got a finger up my butt, and I just don't have the hiccups anymore. And he's one of those like chronic hiccup sufferers. So I think he just had a fun time one night, and they tried something new. If he had a wife or a husband or whatever.
More power to him, I guess. You know, that's awesome.
Skip from 1990 to 2005. A doctor has a patient come into the ER with chronic hiccups, which, think about how bad your hiccups have to be to go to the ER.
Oh, it sounds fair. So stupid, but like, can you imagine how not just inconvenient, how just like, that would suck.
That's why I said, like, if you have hiccups, like, if you have chronic hiccups, you're probably depressed.
Yeah,
like,
that sucks, man.
Try to make that situation sound as serious as possible. I have the hiccups, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's like
that
all
would
right,
actually
buddy.
Affect, like, your work and stuff. I mean, absolutely.
It reminds me of, like, that Brendan Fraser SNL skit. Run, Mr. Professor, that
when he's the helium sucker.
Yeah.
Which, okay. Here's the thing for Rumor Flies Nation. If you guys can find...
Stop using that term.
No. If you can find the clip of Brendan Fraser doing SNL in a Judge Judy skit, please, please, please send it to us. I've been looking for that for years because I swear to God, I've seen it and I laughed my ass off on it and I cannot find it.
Greg, you're on it. Have it by the end of the episode. Right. Thank you.
Sherry O'Terry was Judge Judy, and I believe the other person who was the prosecutor or whatever.
Horatio Sanz.
Yeah, it was Horatio Sanz.
Who we constantly harass on Twitter and has not responded to us yet.
He's a good follow.
Probably.
He really is.
I guess. He got really thin. Anyway, continuing with this. Rectal massage to cure hiccups. That first situation happened, and that was actually reported. And then in 2005... this doctor had a patient come in with like 72 hours worth of hiccups.
Oh, and so he was just like,
tried
pants?
Everything. He was trying to actually stimulate the vagus nerve or the vagus nerve,
yeah,
however you want to say it. Pulling the tongue, doing everything, like pulling the tongue, like,
ooh, that sounds
not
painful.
Choking the person, but like hitting the gag reflex a little bit, doing anything possible to trigger this nerve to actually like inhibit it to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And side note, one thing I did not want to mention, but I'm going to. People have put pacemakers in, or the equivalent of pacemakers, in somebody's chest for like extreme epilepsy or hiccups,
mm-hmm,
at LSU to like block the phrenic nerve to stop hiccups.
Really?
So you can get like implants for this shit.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. But continuing, doctor tried everything possible until he remembered that one time he saw this one case study where to slow the heart rate, somebody massaged the butt. Yes. And essentially he was like, fuck it, why not?
And it worked.
Hey patient, I'm gonna stick my finger up your butt. And it worked.
Good.
Posted it, won an Ig Nobel Prize.
Good for him, man.
And then another doctor in like I think 2009 did the same thing, got a share of the Ig Nobel Prize.
That's incredible.
Apparently,
I think
it works.
I found a really garbage 12-second clip of it. You're right, it's actually really hard to find.
It is
this.
Not easy to find, man.
But the deal is that this is supposedly a kind of prototype method to cure hiccups. But the doctor said that he's never going to do this again. He never had a patient that was extreme enough to do this again, to warrant doing that again too.
Yeah.
Instead, he suggests a nice, good orgasm.
I mean, you're going on two different roads for the same results.
All right. I don't care which gender or which genitals you have. I think it's very hard to get an orgasm while hiccuping.
That's also fair. I never thought about that.
I feel like I would just be too distracted.
Yeah.
By any means possible, whether it be, you know, self-service or with a partner, I don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah.
It would just be goofy. But that might work. So, you know, I'm not saying try it out, but if you have that bad of hiccups, just think about it. Enough about that. Josh, let's move on to topic number two.
My first topic this evening is putting your tongue on the roof of your mouth will cure brain freeze. Now, before we get into this, have either one of you ever tried this?
I put my tongue in a lot of places, but man, sorry. That was just too
easy. Yes.
That was just too easy. I'm sorry.
I don't get brain freeze too often, but that's literally the only thing I know to treat brain freeze aside from just complaining about it the entire time.
I never even considered the idea that it could be a cure.
Okay.
Cure is a little strong language for it. Is anything that could help alleviate the pain from it?
Tangentially, I did see like the tongue contraction, or like sticking the tongue to your top of your mouth, was also a remedy for hiccups. That was very unsubstantiated.
Hmm. Okay.
I actually have heard that one before. That's a good point.
But no, I've only heard of a brain freeze. I read about the tongue to the top of the mouth for hiccups.
No, I've actually heard the one for hiccups. So I've never heard of a brain freeze.
So the phenom of getting...
What's a brain freeze, Josh?
Well, I will get into that. The phenom of getting a brain freeze is known as, I'm going to butcher this, and I'm just going to let y'all know up front, it's sphenopalatine ganglioneuralgia.
It sounded pretty decent.
Pretty close, yeah, I think so.
Oh, pretty, like you know what it is?
Well, I understood most of those words.
Cool, okay, I don't understand any of them.
I just noticed this is the reason for a lot of cute cat videos. You've seen all those cat videos of them eating ice cream, and then they go, ah, and then like lay back on the ground.
That's all. Yeah, that's actually a good point, I didn't think about
cats
that.
Cats get brain freeze.
So when we get a brain freeze, this is our body's way of telling us to slow down. Think about it this way. When you take your temperature, where do you take it? Not rectally. That doesn't count. Most people who take their temperature, what do?
Mouthily.
You put it in, yes, mouthily or orally. You put it under your tongue, okay? Our mouths are very vascular, and drinking something very cold doesn't give our mouth time to absorb the cold very well at all. So that's how a brain freeze occurs. See, the back of our throat have two arteries, one that sends blood to the brain and the other that marks the beginning of where the brain tissue is actually. So that's where they meet one another. And that part back there in your back of your throat, it contracts and it dilates. So the sensation here interprets the cold as pain and prompts your brain to poop itself, basically, and tells you to stop eating something so cold so fast.
So that's crazy because it's like the exact opposite of how capsaicin works with a pepper.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
That makes your it tricks your taste buds into thinking that their temperature is way hotter than they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an actual damage; it's a kind of like a psychological damage. And this is like the exact opposite. It makes something think it's too cold.
Yeah.
Now I don't want to shit on your topic proverbially, mm-hmm. but never mind. You know what I mean. But we're all at any point here. In this, do you get into why people have brain freeze in different parts of their head?
No, I didn't. I never thought about that.
Let's talk about this real quick.
I've only ever had it in the front.
Dude, right here in this artery.
And the back.
I get these horrible. It feels like there's a knife in the back of my head.
So, yeah. Okay,
so Greg's pointing to like literally
right
just like
the base of my skull and the back of my neck.
The nape of his neck, yeah.
Yeah, it's on the right side every time. And it's, I mean, I've had some so bad that's made me almost drop to my knees.
See,
it hurts so bad.
Mine's in my temples.
Drinking? I have an artery. There's a major artery along here. For some reason, it hits that really hard for me.
Mine's in my temples.
Mine's in the front of my head. Okay, I never thought about this.
I've heard some people say it's the center of their head. No, I hear radically different areas. The most consistent here is the front of your head, like you're saying, Josh, but I hear all over the place are people.
Mine is if you were to draw a bar straight from one temple to the other, it like goes to like the roof of my mouth to the temples of my head.
It just that feels area. Like this sharp. It's just it feels like there's a bunch of knives compressing on one point, and then it just instant releases when it stops.
Here's the interesting thing. This is your body's way of just overreacting. No actual harm is being done to your body, but our bodies are really awesome and preventing us from hurting ourselves, and that's why it sends that pain. Or that signal that you have pain, I should say. That's really fascinating. I never thought about the different regions of where it might affect you.
It's a false flag attack.
Oh, man. Okay. So the main way to combat getting a brain freeze is to actually stick your tongue in the roof of your mouth or drink something warm.
Both achieve the same goal, I'm assuming?
Yeah, because when you stick your tongue to the roof of your mouth, it's actually allowing your mouth to warm up from that contact.
Okay. Yeah, okay? That makes more sense after you put it in step-by-step fashion.
Yeah, I was getting to that. It does the same. It's obviously not as effective as drinking something warm because that in itself will warm up your mouth and prevent the brain freeze from happening. But all you basically need to do is warm up that area. So in the most basic sense, this is absolutely true.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know it's kind of quick and dirty, but yeah, that is one way to get rid of brain freezes.
All right, chugging on through. We are going to talk about something that every athlete or generally spa-prone person knows about. And that would be Epsom salts are used to cure aching muscles.
Now, fun fact, my father thought that putting Epsom salt on tomato plants make them grow faster.
And he's absolutely right.
What? No, it kills them.
No, it doesn't.
He was...
So the deal is that I talked to a farmer recently. Don't ask how I got in contact with the farm. I was at a farmer's market.
I put that together, yeah.
Everybody knows so far that I actually grow a lot of peppers in my backyard.
Uh-huh.
And there are several different ways to make them grow. Miracle-Gro is you need to get a lot of phosphates and nitrogen content in the soil for that. But that's to get the peppers to grow. And the reason I say peppers is because they grow very similar to tomatoes. If you want peppers to grow big and bushy, then you add, I think, a high nitrogen content and like a high phosphorus content. However, if you want them to bloom and fruit more, you just litter the fuck out of the soil with Epsom salts and just let it sink in there.
So
I've been told that by several people.
I talked to the owner of one of the more famous fruit stands around here with somebody who you don't like, went to school with you. Yeah, it is them. And they said not to do that.
I think he's an idiot.
Okay, sorry. Continue on with the aching muscles.
Moving on. Aside from plant growth, we're going to talk about using Epsom salts for aching muscles. Josh, you played football when you were in high school. Did you ever use this to cure aching muscles?
No.
Or possibly a torn ligament?
No, I typically used basically Icy Hot.
Okay. I can't speak for Icy Hot.
Yeah, I know, but that's basically what I use.
Greg, you heard this one?
Some sort of menthol-based.
No, I don't even know what Epsom salt is.
Interesting.
Huh.
So
is that like the stuff you use to for ice roads or something?
Are you aware of what float tanks are?
I've heard of,
one of our friends from high school runs a float tank business.
It's a sensory deprivation tank.
Okay, so what is Epsom salt specifically?
Epsom salts are, I'm glad you asked, Greg. The scientific name for them is magnesium sulfate heptahydrate.
Okay.
And that is essentially just the way salts work is you need an acid and a base.
Sodium chloride's an acid and a base.
You need a positive ion and a negative ion
to make
a salt.
And there we go.
Essentially, sodium chloride is the
table salt.
Yeah, it is the poster child of salts because it's called salt and nothing else. That's sodium chloride. This is generally magnesium sulfate. There's also magnesium chloride, which is very good for something I'll talk about later. But essentially, the idea is that magnesium sulfate heptahydrate is useful in curing aching muscles. And it doesn't come from the sulfate mainly. It comes from the magnesium, which plays a very important part in the body, which is just for DNA and RNA replication, lactation. And actually, it does play a good part into muscle repair and growth.
So
there are so many different things that magnesium plays a purpose in.
So I'm going to say...
It's good for heart, circulation, too.
I'm going to say this. When I was playing football and I was working out, I never took creatine or anything like that, but I would take vitamin supplements, and one of them that I always took was magnesium. And I found that I had my most jump in gains, because we were measured in that, was when I was taking magnesium.
Might have been for the creatine, too.
Well, I wasn't taking... I never took creatine.
Okay, got you. So it turns out that the only difference between Powerade and sugar water, Kool-Aid, Flavor-Aid, whatever you
water.
Pretend... Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Three episodes in a row.
It has to.
But this doesn't count because we did this in the same hour or two.
Edgar.
To be fair, he's not forcing... They've all been pretty organic.
Yeah.
The only difference between Kool-Aid and Powerade is the electrolytes, which magnesium happens to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have potassium, sodium, and magnesium that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying makes a little bit of sense right there. Like, that's what makes a sports drink. It has those electrolytes in it, plus a couple of other trace elements. So it turns out that let's talk about what's so good about Epsom salts and how they would possibly work.
Okay.
Number one, I just want to get this out of the way. There's no reason to call them Epsom salts. It's just Epsom salt. It's not a collection of different salts.
It's singular.
Literally one.
Okay.
That's it.
I didn't know that.
So it's just a marketing scam right there. So that should, kind of pave the way for the rest of this. It turns out that people think that what you're supposed to do is take these Epsom salts, and as I had mentioned, the sensory deprivation tanks.
As you say it's one, you say Epsom salts. I'm just pointing that out.
I'm going by the terminology. One of our friends from high school runs a sensory deprivation tank thing. float tanks, and that is essentially tons of Epsom salt in water just to make you buoyant in there so you can float, like, without even having to work with it.
Spencer Fosher?
Yeah.
Okay. I just had to ask. I was curious. Yeah.
And that's one use for it. And also, the Dead Sea is filled with them. It's kind of taken off the base of the Dead Sea. And the idea is that for just regular basses, sometimes bath bombs have Epsom salts in them. I actually do have a carton of it in my bathroom that somebody in the family has used at some point. and the idea is that when you have really aching muscles from like a really hard workout or a really long run or just having a bruise, you're supposed to take a bath in these Epsom salts that are dissolved into water. It's kind of like a bubble bath, but you can't see the bubbles.
Okay.
And there actually are bubble baths that have Epsom salts in them. They dissolve in a lot of things. Now, the skin happens to be the largest organ in the body, and that's like one of the dumbest little trivia facts that I hate when people ask, because it's just such a like trick question. It's just dumb. I hate it.
Okay.
Doesn't make it any less true. And the purpose of the skin is, just go ahead and guess.
To combine with fats?
No, to protect the rest of the body from everything else.
Mine's to combine with fats.
It turns out humans are waterproof. We're waterproof until, like, unless somebody dies in a bathtub and then 2 weeks later they're human soup and just kind of, meld into it.
But that's an anomaly.
Yeah, it's whatever. Human tonkatsu is not a thing that normally happens.
Human tonkatsu.
You got the pork bone stew, you know?
I mean, I got what you're going for. It's just an interesting visual.
Humatsu. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and talk about what skin does. It's meant to keep off most water and fats, and just about everything else. It has several different layers that are like just cascaded to the point where it protects from any other intrusion for chemicals getting in.
That's why it's oily.
Yeah, well, actually, oil does play a part into it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's one reason.
It can be. That's for secretions, too.
Yeah.
That plays a little bit of a part into it. But it turns out that the skin is really good at keeping things out and getting the rest of your organs infected by whatever other elements you're exposed to.
Nice.
Particularly, the one thing that does work is there are topical medicines. The skin is not good for actually taking in medicine, which is what a lot of people would do for magnesium.
We've talked about this before.
Probably.
Yeah, we've talked about that absorption through the skin.
It's not the best method. There are a few things that do work, but it's mainly like the skin's lipophilic at best, which means that it is attracted to fats and is more likely to absorb things through it if they are fatty or hydrocarbons.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, Josh, you have worked with several hydrocarbons. You've worked with acetonitrile, and so have I. You have to worry about getting that on your skin because it can cause kidney failure.
It also hurts like a mofo.
Really?
Yeah.
It was just kind of cold when I had it. I got it in my mouth once.
No, I was working with it and I got a little bit on me and it burned.
Point being is that it's not a water-based substance. It's actually, it's lipophilic. It dissolves easily in fats. The real big thing is to know is that there's hydrophobic and lipophobic or mm-hmm. lipophilic, and just water and fats don't get together. Think about vinegar and oil for salad dressing.
Yeah,
they'll float
thinking.
On top of each other. That's the exact thing. You have either substances that are more prone to bind to fats or more prone to bind to water.
Water.
Mm-hmm. Soap, hand soap or dish soap is an exception. Those are my cells. They can do both. Get you one that can do both. we did that last episode too. God damn it. Anyway, continuing on with that, it's
almost like we have 50 episodes or something.
No.
It turns out that, as I just said, dissolve those Epsom salts in water. So naturally, the skin is not going to take it in very well.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a while for us to even raise it up. I mean, how long does it take you to stay in a bathtub, huh?
I mean, I don't like getting all pruny.
Greg, how long does it take for you to prune up?
I mean, I take pretty quick showers.
You guys don't time it? 17 minutes for me.
That's a very long shower.
Yeah, and that's also a very specific number.
I was in a bathtub.
Oh, no. I don't.
Or a pool.
I haven't taken a
bathtub. I swim.
Hold up.
Yeah, you're talking about
about swimming, or are you talking about taking a bath, like cleaning yourself?
It doesn't matter. You're still in water. You haven't.
No. Those are very different experiences.
Yeah, because I'm trying to achieve two different things.
You haven't measured prune time?
No, it takes me a while, though.
I would say about probably 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's about 17 minutes for me.
Okay.
Maybe it is 17 minutes and I just don't notice. Who knows?
Anyway, everybody, tell us your prune time on Twitter, at RumorFlies.
It's very specific to what we described. I want some Urban Dictionary obscure shit where we're going to get some disgusting thing about prune time from one of y'all. Spare us. Spare us.
Or don't.
To add to what I just said, there are two different types of magnesium. Actually, there's probably multiple, but the two main ones are dehydrated and hydrated. Now, as I had said before, the skin barrier actually, just like the way deactivated charcoal works, as we had talked about before, it has a certain porousness to it that allows certain particles to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that hydrated magnesium, as opposed to dehydrated, is 400 times larger than the dehydrated. So it's much less likely to be absorbed by your skin.
Yeah.
Than it would be by if it was just plain old rock salt, you know? Oh, and also, forgot to mention this up top. Guess who is a proponent of using Epsom salts for anything from muscle aches to hair volumizer to sunburn and to dry lips?
Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz. Not only that, let's go ahead and talk about that real quick. The dry lips, tying into that, he says, Epsom salts are great for curing dry lips if you mix them with Vaseline. Remember what I just talked about for the hydrophobic and hydrophilic thing?
Mm-hmm.
Vaseline is a fatty substance. It's a hydrocarbon. It's only the Vaseline that's like helping your dry lips.
Yeah,
not
it's
the
like,
Epsom
it's
salts.
Like, why are you adding Epsom salts if the Vaseline's already taking care of it?
You could add your grandma's ashes to it and you could say it helps your lips just as much as Epsom salts. Like, it doesn't matter. It just
wasn't there.
This dude drives me insane. Sunburn, it doesn't work either. It doesn't get absorbed.
Wasn't there a song by Bush written about that?
About your grandmother's ashes on your lips?
About Vaseline.
Oh.
No, that's glycerine.
Don't let the days go by.
Vaseline. Well, oh,
Christ.
Back on track. It turns out that...
Wait. Opening line of that song, must be your skin that I'm sinking in.
God damn.
I'm just saying.
Bush is on to something.
Vaseline. Vaseline was an inside job. Wrong Bush. I'm sorry.
9/11 was a Vaseline job.
Okay, I'm sorry. Keep going.
It turns out that the only two spots in the skin that will take in... lipids very easily is either hair follicles or sweat glands, which make up about either 0.1 to 1% of your total skin area.
I'm not a doctor, but that's not a lot.
Yes. So it turns out that magnesium can actually be taken internally, like orally, and that's fine. It goes through your system, gets to the barriers that needs to, because there's no barrier to prevent it. It's going the path
I was
going to
say path of least resistance.
Yes. Skin is so far not the lead suspect to use for the most effective delivery of magnesium.
Okay.
Especially for aching muscles. That's what we're kind of going on, but it can apply to a whole bunch of different things. Now, the studies that have been done on this is that there was a bath study where participants between age 22 to 69 were given 12-minute baths and were given blood and urine tests beforehand. And afterwards, they were given to it.
Okay.
And it turns out the urine samples register with higher magnesium content in them. And also blood plasma had it too. Now, the caveats to this is that urine samples having higher magnesium means that your body had already reached peak magnesium equilibrium and it didn't need any more of it.
So it's trying to get rid of it.
Yes.
It's like with vitamin C, though. We talk about that. Anything you take, your body just immediately starts expelling it as waste
flush
in its whole form.
Are we just going with like 90s bands references? Vitamin C?
Oh, man. God. That's such an emotional song. So anyway, most of the magnesium is secreted. You already reach equilibrium. Doesn't need any more. You just piss it out. So that's one flaw to the actual theory. Secondly, it turns out that the blood plasma levels of magnesium went down back to baseline within 24 hours.
So it wasn't sustainable.
No, it was not sustainable.
Okay.
Just like the whole soy boys thing that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like that. And it turns out the kicker for this one that I think was the most telling for me was that we like to talk about publications and the integrity of them. Well, this one was only posted on the internet. And not only that, it was posted on the website of, get this, the Epsom Salt Council. I didn't know there was an Epsom Salt. We found something. Didn't it have the Banana Council? Oh, that was a fake thing.
Yeah, that was fake.
The Epsom Salt Council is real.
I mean, they clearly have...
Guys, can we start the Banana Council?
Dude, I would love it.
Let's they clearly it. They have a way that they want the decision to go.
Yeah.
Bias, that's what I'm looking for.
Like I said, look into this. And, you know, I haven't gone explicitly opinionated about GMOs, but for all these studies, really the people that do the research on it is either the FDA, which could be paid off, or it could be Monsanto paying for the studies. Yes, we
Big Pharma.
That. But this is a situation where the Epsom Salt Council did not allow for this study to be given a peer review.
Oh, my bullshit meter must be going off.
It was
the fucking
just
charts.
On that website.
Wow.
They could have had like one of the executives.
Well, they're the experts. Why do you need to be peer reviewed?
Checkmate. I'm done. We're done with the podcast.
Checkmate, atheists.
Yeah, it's like the movies I make. I don't let people look at them. That's why they're so popular.
So
that's good.
So I'm going to move on from this study because I don't give it too much credibility. Now, it turns out that there was a study in the Dead Sea, which, if anybody knows, the Dead Sea is, Greg, where's that? Please, oh my God, help me, I'm bad at geography. It's near Israel?
It is near the Promised Land. I cannot give you an exact location. This is where my brother needs to come help.
It has an extremely high Epsom salt content to the point where everything is dead in there because the salt content is too high. That's why they call it the Dead Sea. Nothing really lives in there except for a few fish, and then possibly you can walk on water because you can float on it because of the Epsom salt content. Checkmate, Jesus. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and talk about the Dead Sea study. The Dead Sea is known to have a lot of healing properties to it because of they think of its mineral content. And the Dead Sea is known to have high Epsom salt content. So they actually did a study involving the amount of Epsom salts in somebody's blood plasma after being exposed to floating into it for a certain amount of time. Greg, continue.
The Dead Sea is, it borders Israel, the West Bank, and Jordan.
Okay. So, ballparked enough. I'm impressed with America in general. I represent it in geography skills. So, continuing, after this study, they said that there was a big spike in internal magnesium content for people that had been in the Dead Sea. Oh, wait, the study actually tested people that had near drowned in the Dead Sea.
What?
Yeah, they found people that had traumatic experiences. It wasn't from skin exposure. It was from sucking in a whole lot of Dead Sea water, which is just loaded with magnesium.
Yeah.
I think the numbers that I can remember is that there is about...
probably pretty sanitary.
198 millimoles per liter of magnesium in the water in the Dead Sea.
That's a lot.
The human body is 0.98 millimoles per liter.
Yeah.
For... blood content.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So naturally there would be a spike. But in terms of people that didn't nearly drown and take in a whole lot of Dead Sea water, there was no toxicity, and also there was no real change in the actual blood levels of magnesium. Which, and by the way, I keep going to this blood plasma levels. That directly correlates to how much you're getting to your muscles to actually heal the aches.
Okay.
So I'm not saying anything about magnesium supplements. That's probably okay. It's most likely the best way to deliver it, and it probably helps for recovery. I think a lot of pre-workout actually has magnesium in it just for that.
It does.
I think there's a post-workout formula, too, at GNC.
Yes.
Moving on from the Dead Sea study, there was also a study that was done on magnesium cream. Because remember how I talked about lipophilic?
Yeah,
the put it on lipophilic? The skin. That's why you see like aloe vera cream, like, you know, all those different like, you know, moisturizers that are creamy.
Mm-hmm.
They're mixed with hydrocarbons or petroleum gels or anything else that is not just like a water wash on. I mean, even suntan.
I was going to say sunscreen.
So yeah, sunscreen. That is lipophilic and suntan lotion. That's also a lipid.
Mm-hmm.
It helps absorb into your skin better for whatever purpose you need. So that's the crazy part about it. Like this would hypothetically work. However, this study was placebo controlled.
Okay.
Didn't work as well as you think it would.
Mm.
So it turns out that even in the situation where the magnesium was suspended in something that's optimal for skin absorption, still not much change between the placebo and the actual testers.
Well, so my thinking here is that does it have to do with like your body temperature, like how warm you are or anything like that? Like, would that affect how well it absorbs it?
They actually did in the bath study that I was talking about, kept the temperature between 70 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit or Celsius, and Celsius would kill you.
Okay.
What? 70 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
And that's pretty warm. It's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, actually, it's kind of like a just regular pool water level. I think that's the regular, like, hot tub temperature is about 100 degrees. So, you know, that might play something into it, but at the same rate, your skin, your pores may open up more, but remember how I said
that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Your pores may open up more, but remember how I said that dehydrated versus hydrated magnesium, 400 times size difference?
Yeah, that's true.
So, and even more so, opens up more with more heat.
Okay.
So I don't think that really plays much into it. The last study that I'm going to mention is the cadaver study. This is when scientists got full reign to do whatever the fuck they wanted to skin and find out if magnesium actually absorbed through it. I don't know if this meant that they just had some bodies that were doing it to science and just like, we're going to pour some just, you know, salt water on it and see what happens and then study it afterwards.
Well, what happened?
Not much.
Oh.
Didn't get absorbed.
Okay.
So in all cases, it has been either extremely dubious as to the study proving that magnesium is absorbed through the skin and therefore gets to the muscles, and therefore these baths are, helpful. To flat out, there's no way this can actually happen. The best way to do it, just take magnesium supplements. But however, there are serious side effects to hypermagnesia, I think it was called. Just watch your intake. Take what it says on the recommended dosage. Honestly, those post-workout blends that you find at GNC or some other extremely expensive ripoff store, they probably have the right amounts in it. I mean, just the way I sold them, it's whatever, but they probably have the right amounts of magnesium for post-workout.
So does Epsom salt cure aching muscles?
No.
No? Okay.
Well, conditional. Internally, yes. Soaking it, no. But Dr. Oz had said that it was used as, like, you know, a hair volumizer, sunburn, bee sting, all sorts of different stuff, even just like, you know, aching muscles. The one thing he didn't mention in his little slideshow, which I had to go through at a very slow pace, was laxatives. Epsom salts are good laxatives. So if you need to get a dookie out, go to the internet, look up the recipe for that laxative tea, and then just do it.
Okay.
Josh, take us out.
My last topic this evening is feed a cold and starve a fever. Shout out to a previous episode where I said exactly this and had no idea we were going to cover it. I literally mentioned it the last episode. When I tell you guys that I have no idea what my topics are before I cover them, and half the time I have no idea what Ryan's covering when we divvies out the topics, I genuinely mean that. So, yeah, well, we're now going to get more in-depth about all of this. So, we here at Rumor Flies, we love our origins, and I actually believe that I found one when it comes to feeding a cold and starving a fever. The saying can be traced back to a 1574 dictionary.
Whoa, you found an origin.
Mm-hmm, by John Withall that noted, quote, fasting is a great remedy of a fever. Now, the main belief here is that eating food actually warms up the body, and not eating does the exact opposite. I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. So if that sounds familiar.
Semantically, it works, but a cold doesn't necessarily mean you're cold.
Well, I'm going to kind of get into that in a minute.
All right.
But this is basically what I covered with hypothermia in our previous episode, Survival Myth. So it's kind of coming full circle again. Also, shout out Dave Stecco. Also, shout out Primitive Technology.
And David Flora.
Shout out David Flora. And while I'm at it, shout out Greg Tilton. Here's the catch, okay? Recent studies show that...
Shout out Jordan Harbor.
Yeah, why not? Dark myths. Recent studies have shown that half of what I'm saying is actually true. You should feed a cold and feed a fever instead of starving it.
Well, it's weird when I'm thinking about it, you know, semantically. I usually, when I have a cold, I get a fever. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
So my thing is that a lot of times when I got a fever, the only cure.
Shut the fuck up right now.
No cowbell. Okay.
You're the only one laughing. You're the only one laughing.
No, I'm not. I'm just smirking right now.
I'm smirking.
Okay.
They can't see that.
When your body fights an illness, it needs energy.
I was going to say, I can't imagine starving yourself in a time when your body needs nutrients. Yes. It could possibly be the right move.
Exactly.
But then the virus don't get nutrients no more either.
I mean, I actually see that too. That's some pretty sound logic. But it's more important that your body has the energy that it needs to fight this infection. But you also have to be careful not to overeat, which is my problem half the time. Fever is part of the immune system's attempt to beat having a virus. It raises your body temperature, which increases your metabolism and results in more calories burned. So basic science says that for each degree of temperature that is raised, the energy demand increases. That's pretty self-explanatory. The more energy you burn, you need to get more in you to supplement that.
Well, that's why they always recommend like soup and stuff. That's easier. When you're sick, you don't want to eat.
I'm going to get into that.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. That's great. I was doing this research and I thought a little bit about that. And I'm like, when you're sick,
my broth is so effective.
When you're sick, both of you, what is the number one thing people tell you to eat?
Chicken noodle soup.
Yep.
Yeah. Just some sort of broth. Yeah.
Well, specifically chicken noodle soup.
So, my little two cents on that is that the only non-research reasoning I thought about that for like the fever happening is because,
you need more cowbell.
No, not because of that. It's because we talked about armadillos having leprosy or,
Oh, okay. I see where you're going.
And their body temperature.
Wait, are you saying if they had cowbell, they wouldn't have leprosy?
Leprosy and rabies. And a lot of the animals that we have talked about having these potential actual diseases, it turns out that their body's temperature is not very conducive to a good environment for those actual viruses.
Yeah.
And what my reasoning is that like we have a fever to actually just kind of like push out those viruses by making an inhospitable environment for them to thrive in.
Well, that's basically what it is. To go along with that though, what is more important than eating is drinking, because
sure, I'm doing that right now.
Well, a fever dehydrates your system. So you need to get more fluids inside of you. That's why people tell you when you're sick, you need to drink water, drink. Or that's why a lot of people would actually drink like sports drinks, like to get more electrolytes in their system.
Tea. I knew it. I hear green tea is recommended a lot.
Yeah, that's another one I have heard as well. Replacing fluids is very critical to helping your body battle infection. And that's the same thing as also for combating colds as well. I also did some research as to why the time-honored sick person remedy is chicken noodle soup. And chicken noodle soup has calories, which are important, as well as the all-important liquid. So it kind of acts as a twofer, like when you say broth specifically, Greg. And the warm vapor actually rising from the bowl can also moisten and loosen up dried mucus inside of you.
Oh, it's like Theraflu.
It's pretty much that its own way of doing it while also getting liquids and solids into your system. The same goes for the vapor in hot tea, like you mentioned before. And taking a hot shower can also help out as well. It just depends on how brave you are, because I know when I'm not feeling well, especially if I have a fever or something like that, the last thing I want to do is get into a really hot shower.
Oh, man. When I'm sick, I look forward to my showers.
So do we have a differentiation between fever and cold at this point? Because you said, what is it, starve cold tea to fever?
Yeah. So fever, you know, is when it's your body temperature is higher than the normal 98.1, I believe is what it is. Mm-hmm.
Isn't it 98.7?
That's the one I jumped on.
Yeah, it's actually a whole degree range. My average body temp is 97.8.
Okay, well, that's a fever. So when you're running like significantly higher, like over 100, basically 100 and higher is how I calculate it. I don't know what the scientific number is.
It's 97.7 is the... Oh, no. It's 98.8 is the 97 average. 97
to 99 is the average body temperature. With 98.6 accepted as the target.
Things have changed since grammar school.
Okay. And so when you're running a fever, I typically would say anything over 100. And when you have a cold, I think that has more to do with being stopped up, more mucus inside your nasal cavity and things like that.
Okay.
So, eating a cold and a fever is more important especially drinking. But that you're supposed to feed it and not starve out any of it. So
I just think in most situations, you're not supposed to starve out any part of you in any condition.
Except in severe hypothermia cases. But yeah, so...
And, reference, and, last episode.
Right. So instead of, you know, feed a cold, yes. Starve a fever, no. Feed the fever.
All right.
I know, it sounds silly.
That sounds like an 80s hair metal song.
Yeah, it does,
feed
huh?
Feed the fever! Feed the fever!
That's pretty good. Okay, so to wrap up this remedies, Ryan, hiccup remedies, shoot your shot.
Ah, Jesus Christ.
Give the TLDR.
Any old wives' tale you could think of probably doesn't work. Sugar might, rectal massage might, and then some hard medication might. But honestly, if you have that bad of hiccups, go to emergency room and they'll try to figure out something for you.
So rumor flies gun to your head, true or false?
False.
Okay. Tongue
just
in the,
out of averages.
Tongue on the roof of your mouth cures brain freeze. I'm going to put that in the true category.
Okay.
I put my stamp of approval on that. Ryan, Epsom salt cures aching muscles?
Maybe internally by pill form, but not by soaking in a bath filled with Epsom salts, which is what most people do.
Okay. And the last topic, feed a cold, starve a fever. Only half true, it's feed a cold and feed a fever as well.
Holy shit, people. We are done season 5, and this has been such a fun experience. 50! Thank you for staying with us for 50 goddamn episodes.
That's crazy. That's really, really crazy.
I think we actually have a lot more coming in the future, and I really want to talk more about it, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
There's so much we have planned. You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that goes on that we give you guys a little bit of insight into, but we like to keep some surprises up our sleeve.
But until
should
then,
tell them about the next Patreon.
What?
Josh's one.
Oh no, the next Patreon might be mine.
Oh, I thought we were going to do the.
Oh, we didn't talk about that. Never mind.
No.
Greg doesn't even know. Ha ha.
No. Just to kind of give you guys a little bit of insight, one of our next couple, it doesn't matter. I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm going to give my own basically tips and tricks of going to Walt Disney World, what to do, what not to do, what to worry about, what to think about, how to approach it, things like that. It's probably going to be a lot of long-winded. I'm going to warn you in advance, but I'm going to have a lot of fun doing it.
So something that we generally do for the Patreon episodes, we have each participant steer an episode each. So, you know, Greg gets his episode, I get mine, Josh gets his. Josh's gonna do Disney. Greg recently did one on how to start a podcast.
Oh, that was really fascinating.
It was fun. I kind of just was there as a passive listener.
You're a much needed guided force in the Pandora's box that is Greg's stream of content.
Passive listener. And now we're talking about possibly doing a Japan travel blog. We don't know if we're gonna do that as a Patreon or as a bonus episode, and then Greg and Josh can comment on it when I'm not in the room. So,
and I'm looking forward to that.
So, who knows?
Yeah. So, again, thank you guys. 50 episodes. That's a huge milestone. This is, you know, we always love doing this podcast, but to be honest with y'all, we just never really gave much thought to hitting 50 episodes. None of this would be possible without any of you. Thank you to all of our Patreon donors. Thank you guys for interacting with us on Twitter, Instagram, whatever it may be, the emails, just all the love you send to us. I'm going to say it again. iTunes reviews, those have always been wonderful. If you can leave us one, we would greatly appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Again, we're going to be at Podern Love, Podern.love, promo code rumor. I'm going to do this because we haven't done it in a while. Darkmyths.org.
I haven't done this either in a while. At Funimation on Twitter. Go ahead and just buy them by getting me to be a voice actor. Like I said, I will do two lines. I don't care. I will do it pro bono. Just get me a voice acting position.
He actually
right
has
there.
A coke problem. He'll do as many lines.
It's a good
rails
one.
Rails on rails on rails. But also, just we'll see you before that, before the next season. Obviously, we do in-between stuff.
Yeah, you guys will be having something in the not-too-distant future. This is a much-needed break to kind of gather ourselves and get our lives in order because, you know, life just gets crazy. So we are so excited to start season 6 later on this year, which is nuts. And just want to say thank you, guys. And here's to 50 more for this episode of Rumor Flies. I'm Josh.
I'm Ryan. Cheers, guys.
And I'm Greg.
We love you guys. See you later.
Bye.